Hello there, and welcome to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore. I don't know where Tim Kearns is. Our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and this is a program we've been doing on Monday nights for quite a while here, focusing mainly on high school sports, but other stuff as well. We do get into it, and I'm hoping Tim will check in at some point. I don't know. He's not answering, so we'll see what happens there. But we do have a lot to take care of this as high school sports are fully underway right now, and we'll take a look at the scoreboard as it unfolds. We'll hope to have some scores. We do have one score already. I just came back from the St. Mary's softball game against Gloucester in Gloucester, and we just put a post up there with some pictures. St. Mary's pitcher Lily Newhall threw a four-hitter. Michaela Walker blasted a bases-loaded triple in the second inning to lead St. Mary's to a 9-1 win over Gloucester. Of course, today is opening day, which meant new coaches on each sideline, Brian Aiello for Gloucester, and a familiar face, Colleen Newbury, Colleen Newbury, former coach at Danvers High School, is now the head coach at St. Mary's. So congratulations to Lily Newhall and the St. Mary's Spartans on their opening day win. And I also have a link on our site to the Daily Item, the Item Live story about Lily's letter of intent to play softball at St. Elm's next year. So that's there. You can check that out with a few pictures that I was able to get. Did not have time to stay for coaches' interviews after the game, as the game went pretty long for a seven-inning game. But anyway, St. Mary's opens up with a 9-1 win. Later on, we'll be talking with our usual guests, our usual experts, Gary Larrabee and on golf, and Mike Grenier on basketball. We'll also be checking out some interviews I did, I recorded. Yeah, this is Tim. Okay, let's go. Hello, Mr. Kearns.
Oh, good evening, Mr. Moore.
Well, we are live. I'm glad you could check in. Did you have a JetBlue connection?
No, my phone was at my computer, and I was in the other room having supper with media. And I said, geez, it's 7 o'clock. Rick hasn't called. She goes, "Did your phone?" I went, "Oh, yeah."
Okay. Yep. I'm familiar with that aspect. I was just opening up with the fact we're going to have a couple of recorded interviews coming up here in a minute. We'll be talking with, or in a couple of minutes, we'll be talking with Pentucket boys lacrosse coach Dan Leary, and then also with Matt Gwilliam. He is the head coach I've got that wrong. Dan Leary is the boys coach at Pentucket, and Matt Gwilliam is the girls coach at Essex Tech. I'll get it right one of these days. Anyway, we'll be chatting with those two gentlemen in this first half hour after we check in with Tim. And then at the bottom of the hour, Gary Larrabee on golf, big golf week, of course, with the Masters coming up on Thursday, and lots to talk about with Mike Grenier as well, another sports writer who is kind enough to check in with us each week. We have a lot of scores to look for in the Northeastern Conference baseball in particular. Danvers is at Pentucket, Saugus is at Greater Lawrence, Marblehead at Manchester Essex, and lots of scores that we hope to have posted this evening, even if we can't fit them in to this program. So, Tim, I don't know where you'd like to start. As I said, we're going to be talking to a couple of lacrosse coaches coming up here at about 7:10 or thereabouts. But what comes to your sports mind?
Well, my deep sadness that the Connecticut women fell to South Carolina. Kudos to South Carolina that they came out, took the game right to Connecticut from the get-go. I turned it on and they were already down 13-2. The loss of their other big really hurt. Connecticut, their starting center, had to be very, very careful accumulating fouls. But South Carolina was just ferocious. They followed every shot. They out-rebounded Connecticut by 25, and I've never heard that happen before. But they were demons on the board, creating second chance possessions and baskets and all. So congratulations to South Carolina on winning the women's national championship. The men, of course, will tip off tonight at 9 o'clock. The Celtics, I nearly fell out of my chair when I saw the score.
Yeah, that was something.
Yesterday afternoon's game, I'm thinking, okay, they were mad.
Yeah. And you know what was funny? We'll talk with Mike about this, but they did look good. It was pretty outstanding as, you know, it looked like they didn't miss a beat after being beaten. I'm just trying to say, I've got another score here, Tim, that I just lost. So we'll have to get back to it. Is it lacrosse? Yeah, here we go. In lacrosse, in boys lacrosse, in Neshoba Valley Tech 11, Mystic Valley 2. I thought I had a Northeast Conference score here somewhere. But apparently I don't. Well, we'll come back to this later. But yeah, they look good, Tim. Manchester Essex 12 and Marblehead 4 in girls lacrosse. And that's kind of a surprise because Manchester Essex and Marblehead are both perennial powers in high school girls lacrosse. So 12-4, Manchester Essex over Marblehead.
Yeah, Saturday afternoon I drove up to Newburyport and I watched Gloucester take on Newburyport in baseball, and Gloucester walked away with a 4-3 win. Zach Morris looked very strong in his first outing of the year. They got some timely hitting. They made most of the plays defensively. Talking to Coach Gentile today, he was pleased to get that first win under their belt. Mars should have an outstanding year. He dominated with his fastball, not having much of a curveball on Saturday, but early in the spring still. So that's not something I don't think they need to overly concern themselves with. That'll come as the weather starts to warm up, which is really, really, really want to have it working. And it was, you know, in watching him throw, to me, he was just rolling it over way too long out of his wrist. So there was no snap to the curveball. But, big kid, strong kid. He's committed to, URI for college. So I want to congratulate him on that. He made early decisions. So that takes that out of the equation for him having to worry about that. The young man he pitched against from Newburyport is committed to Roanoke College down in Virginia. So it was a battle of two guys that have already got their college future set, and both of them should have very successful years.
Yeah, that's great. Got some midseason stuff going on already. And it was actually not too unpleasant at the high school today, at Gloucester High School. You know, on the waterfront there with the wind and so on, it was pretty good. Another score we have in girls lacrosse this afternoon, it was Beverly 16, Woburn 9. And as we said, Manchester Essex over Marblehead 12-4. And I think those are all the local scores that have come in so far. And as most games started around 4 o'clock or so, we did tell you it was St. Mary's 9 and Gloucester 1. Lily Newhall just outstanding. 9 strikeouts, no walks, gave up only 4 hits. As St. Mary's visited Gloucester and went back down to Lynn with a 9-1 win. And Coach, maybe a minute or two here to wax poetic on the Red Sox opening coming up on Thursday against the Yankees.
Well, you know, it's always a big day, opening day, but then you throw in the Yankees and it becomes an even bigger occasion trying to get off on the right foot against your dreaded nemesis from the Bronx. You want to get a game up on him anytime you can, certainly. It's going to be interesting that, you know, they've got new personnel, pitching staff. You know, you're not going to have Sale for several months yet, if you have them really at all effectively during the entire season. It means Evaldi has to really stand up, and some of the other guys, we're going to have to really have solid wins. We're going to have to come through with 12 to 15 wins apiece in order for the Red Sox to have a chance to be in playoff mode or even win the division. You know, Jackie Bradley is back, but Kiki Hernandez seems to have the center field position tied down. So does that make Jackie a utility outfielder? Going to have to wait and see how it all shakes out. I think the first couple of weeks, Cora and his magic beard are going to have to make some really tough decisions in terms of who's playing first. You know, kind of like a who's on first, because you don't know. But you definitely know what's on second, and that's some story as we will
unfold. Oh, my God. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay.
and then he gets Xander and Sharp, you know, and so Sharp second, third are pretty much set. If you get a possible rotation at first base, you're set behind the play. Your outfield could be set for a while with again Jackie Bradley Jr. Not much of a bat, but just tremendous late inning defense that he can bring to nail down games throughout the entire season. So it's going to be interesting in how well the starting lineup and the bullpen hold forth. It's going to be critical to get off to a good start and hopefully put some distance between themselves and the Yankees and Toronto and Baltimore. Is that Reese in the East? That's for sure.
Coming up, we'll have lacrosse coaches, high school type, in just a second here on North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore. That's Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and we will be back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore. Happy to be talking now with Dan Leary, the boys lacrosse coach at Pentucket High School. And Dan, welcome to MSO. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Hey, great start for you guys. And before we get to yesterday's game, I want to ask you a little bit about what you expected from these kids, who you got coming back, that kind of thing, in terms of your preseason prep.
Yeah, I mean, we had a lot of guys coming back from our team last year, a lot of young guys, but they did have varsity experience. So, you know, we expected a lot out of them right from the get-go, and it was nice to see them put it on the field and get that first victory.
How was the preseason, the practice and so on, different this year from, let's say, the pandemic stuff? Because it's changed so much for these kids, and they're finally getting to move about without masks and have some kind of normal thing. So what was the your practice like, and you know, the difference between this year and last year?
Yeah, well, last year was unique, again, like you said, with the masks and everything, but the time of year that it was much different than we normally start in March.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times we can't get outside when we first start. So last year, because of the fall two season,
right,
we started much later in the spring. So actually last year's preseason was a lot easier for us outside of the masks and the other restrictions. But, you know, this year the weather has cooperated for the most part. We've been inside the gym for a few practices, but we were able to get out. And in the first 2 weeks in March, that's usually, that's not always something we can do. So that was good for the guys to get outside and help us prepare for that first game.
Yeah, well, the field's in pretty good shape because we didn't get a lot of snow and rain to have to fight, you know, in early season. So you were able to get some good practices outside, as you say.
Yeah, so we normally we play on town fields right now because our school is under
right.
construction.
Yep.
We have a brand new school being built, and there'll be a new turf field with that. So we're kind of waiting for that stuff to be done. But right now, hopefully we get on our town fields this week. But we were able to practice on the football practice field this week at our current high school.
Are you going to be able to have home games?
Yep, we play at Pipestave Park in West Newbury, so we'll have home games once those town fields are open.
Okay, I gotcha. All right, tell me about who you expect your leaders to be this year.
Well, just to start, we have one senior captain, Aiden Tierney, who's been playing with us since he was a freshman. And along with him, we have Evan Napolitano, a defenseman, and Cam Smith, our goalie. Those three kids will be captaining us this year, and we expect a lot from them on the field, but especially off the field. They've been great so far. They were great in the off season, getting guys together for the indoor leagues and working out before school in the weight room. So we expected a lot out of them, and they've been great the first 2 weeks of the season, and all three of them had good days yesterday.
Do you, as a coach, Do you have a particular, I don't know how to phrase it, a particular style you want the kids to play, or do you have to change from year to year depending on what you have, as you know, for talent?
I would say that we try to change year to year just based off of what we have, but I'm lucky to have an assistant coach, Alex Roberts, who's been with me since we started, and another assistant, Josh Wazlowski, who played for me actually my very first year, and he now teaches at the school. So we all kind of have the same values of how we want the team to be built and how we want the kids to act and play. But in terms of, and through that, it's hard work, it's discipline and things like that. But in terms of on the field, we do kind of change it, year to year based off of our personnel.
Okay.
But again, we kind of start with the values and then, you know, we worry about the X's and O's stuff a little bit later in the preseason.
What's the emphasis on? I know it's, both, you know, both sides of the field, but are you more, defensive minded or offensive minded?
We've always kind of, been a defense first team. We have a really strong goalie and some good long sticks this year, so we've always kind of hung our hat on that end of the field. But, you know, yesterday it was, we had a really good day offensively too, so that was good to see because, at times last year, you know, we didn't score a lot of goals and, you know, we thought we could have done a little bit better in certain games. So it was really nice to see the guys have a fast start and, you know, hit the double digit mark for goals. I think it's going to give those, especially those younger guys, a little bit of confidence.
What's a quick thumbnail on your scoring yesterday? We should remind people that you beat Swampscott 13-4 in the season opener. That was the opener for you guys, yes?
Yep, that was. Okay. We had a couple scrimmages, but that was our first game.
All right, so good first half, good second half. How'd it go?
We were pretty balanced in scoring throughout the game. A little bit slow in the first quarter. I think offensively especially, there were a couple nerves for us. But yeah, we really kind of opened it up in the second and third quarter. Those were our highest scoring quarters. But again, it was kind of a balanced attack throughout the game. And again, like our goalie Cam Smith and our defense did a great job of limiting their opportunities. And when they had really good looks, Cam came up with, you know, he had I think he had 11 saves yesterday. So every time it looked like maybe they were going to make a little bit of a run, our defense made a big play and got us the ball back on offense.
And transition game good? Is that how you score?
Yeah, I would say we were a little balanced yesterday. Some 6-on-6 goals, a man up goal, and then we definitely pushed the ball in transition. We try to get it out quick.
Yeah,
we have some talented long sticks that can handle the ball really well. So we try to give them the opportunity to play through transition as long as it's within, the game plan and, you know, we're not forcing shots that, you know, we shouldn't be taking, but they're pretty good about it those two poles that help us, I mentioned Evan Napolitano, but also Ethan Ferrant. So those guys really do a great job in transition.
All right, a couple more questions. Strength of schedule, does that carry over into spring sports as well? Do you have to go out and get, play other opponents outside the Cal?
Yeah, we definitely do. And I think that's consistent through all the sports. But the Cape Ann League lacrosse is really strong and really competitive. We also add in a couple Merrimack Valley Conference opponents, and then, you know, we had Swampscott, who's in the NEC, which is also very competitive. But again, we don't have to go too far to get really competitive across because the Cape Ann League is so competitive.
All right. Speaking of that, who are some of the tougher teams that you're going to be facing this year, if not all of them?
I think you just nailed it. I think it's all of them. Each year, especially with us, we really, every year we play, you know, North Reading is competitive. Newburyport is always up there. Linfield is competitive. Ipswich, you know, coming off a couple of years ago, I guess multiple years ago now, but, you know, winning a state championship. And there's other teams that pop in there, and there's just a lot of talent. So we know that each game, every Cal game especially, we know is going to be a dogfight.
Okay. Who's next? When's your next game?
We play Newburyport on Friday.
Oh, there you go. Right to start. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, Dan, listen, thank you for taking the time on this Sunday. I appreciate it. And I'd like to check in with you from time to time during the season, if that's okay.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Awesome. Be well and good start. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
Take care. That's Dan O'Leary, who is the Pawtucket boys lacrosse coach with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.
The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, executive sports editor at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
All right, we're back now with the girls lacrosse coach at Essex Tech, Matt Gwilliam. And Matt, welcome to MSO.
Thanks for having me.
All right. It's, I've been a little confused here this weekend. It's the first time we've been out in 2 years really covering outside sports and doing interviews, so thanks for being patient with me. Let's get right to the top, Matt. You started out with a nice win on Friday against Greater Lowell. It was Friday, right?
It was.
Okay. All right. So I want to get to that game, but before that, I'd like to back up a little bit and tell me a little bit about preseason, about, you know, what you expect from your team this year.
So last year with only having conference games, we went undefeated in the conference, which was huge for us as a program and kind of showing, where we want to be at. We want to be at the top of the conference every year. We want to be the team to beat. We're fortunate we're returning, several juniors that were outstanding players last year. They had the two most, points on the team last year, and, Maddie McDonald and, Katie Kamo. And the expectation is, like, we want to do this again. We want to be the conference champs outright. I'm not sharing that with anybody else. And we want to go further. And we want to, this year, hopefully the vocational tournament is supposed to be back. We want to be the top vocational school in the state. And then we want to get further, punch our way further into the state tournament.
Will you still have to schedule these outside games for strength of schedule like all the other seasons?
Yeah, so we've gone out to Hamilton Wenham. We're going to be playing St. Mary's as well as Manchester Essex. That was the team that knocked us off out of the state tournament last year, and so I think that'd be a great kind of rematch to gauge where we're at as a team.
Yeah, some schools year in and year out just dominate, and, you know, they're always one. Marblehead's always up there, Newburyport, you guys.
Yeah.
All right, tell me a little bit about your position players now, maybe where your strengths are, and then we'll talk a little bit about your first game.
Strengths are on our offense. Maddie McDonald, again, returning, junior, started last year as a sophomore, had 54 goals, and had 8 on Friday. She's just a very, very, capable player, has a very, very high lacrosse IQ. It's kind of like having an assistant coach, on the field with us. She's benefited by having, her friend Katie Kamo, down at attack, along with the senior Libby Grayson. They kind of run the offense from behind. Maddie runs it from up top. And our goal is, it's a whole team effort. Maddie had 8 goals, but she's not just doing ISO plays. Katie had 6 assists that day.
Mm-hmm.
We work on making sure it's a team effort. One person, isn't the team.
How about, conditions and so on? It seems like, it's been a cold spring, but it's been pretty dry so far.
Yeah, that's been great for us. We've got a turf field, so
okay.
No issues really for us at the start of the year. That was a little different going to Greater Lowell. They're on a grass field, so ground balls were a bit tricky for us on Friday, but we worked on that on Saturday, making sure we can get out of those scrums and win those 50-50 balls.
Yeah, how do you do on those face-offs? I don't know. To me, when I watch girls lacrosse, or even boys lacrosse, that is such a key part of the game, is getting that ball from the center.
Yeah, I think we were about 70 to 80% of our,
wow,
we had draw control 70 to 80% of the time. Again, that comes with Maddie, getting some self-draws, getting some help on ground balls in the circle. And that, yeah, it just helps you control the flow of the game. You can get it in your stick and push it down onto the offense,
mm-hmm,
get their defense tired, and keep them working, let our defense rest up.
Exactly. Do you, who are your biggest challenges in the conference this year?
The conference tends to be Shawshing and Mystic Valley. So Shawshing, in the years past, has been the best team in the conference.
Mm-hmm.
And this past year, we overtook them, and we want to stay there. But they, Alex is a great coach. She just year in, year out has a quality program. So we know that that's going to be a challenge. We beat them last year, but that doesn't indicate anything for this year. We're going to have to show up for both those games this year to make sure that we take the conference, and that usually tends to be our opponent in the championship game for the vocational tournament as well. So we get to see them about 3 times a year.
Is that a long road trip to Shawshing or Mystic Valley?
35 minutes, not so bad. The Lowell ones are over
Lowell,
an hour,
yeah.
So.
Okay. All right, how about some youngsters? Do you have any new kids coming in to replace some of anybody who might have been lost this past season?
We have a very young program. We're from talking with other coaches and other programs, we are seem to be one of the few that had to make cuts this year. I know lots of programs are only fielding varsity teams because they didn't have enough young athletes. We had over 60 girls come up for 40 spots. 24 of those were freshmen. We ended up keeping 14, 15 freshmen to try to make sure, you know, we keep the program stable and steady. And a lot of those girls are coming in with some youth experience, 2 to 4 years, and having played the game. So that's huge for us as to keep the program growing, right? We can just hopefully have those numbers year in and year out.
Any multi-sport athletes?
Oh, funny. Yeah, lots of girls with basketball. That helps us on defense. The same kind of positioning and stuff. A couple of soccer players and a few volleyball, which is great for the hand-eye coordination.
Yeah. All right, what do you got coming up this week?
We got a big week. We're going back to Lowell today for Lowell Catholic. Wednesday we have our first home game against Mystic Valley. And then Friday we get to head out to Neshoba. So a lot of road trips today.
All right. That is Essex Tech girls lacrosse coach Matt Gwillion with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, my appreciation to both coaches for checking in with me. I had one interview, of course, on Sunday. That was with Dan Larry, and then Matt Gwillion was today. Both coaches starting off with wins in lacrosse. And we have another score in. Mike Giardi, the Marblehead baseball coach, has checked in. Manchester Essex 12, Marblehead 0. And as Coach Giardi says, not the season opener that Marblehead wanted, as the Magicians gave up 10 walks and 3 hit batsmen. Manchester Essex took full advantage, pulling up 12 runs against the Magicians. The Magicians got one hit, and that was by senior Liam McElroy. So Marblehead will try to get its first win tomorrow, as they will be hosting Swampscott at 4:30 in a game that was moved up from Wednesday due to weather concerns. So we got some really surprises already, Tim.
Yeah, it's early. You know, you got some teams that are rebuilding, and you know, they're trying to fit people into spots vacated by graduated seniors. You know, for one reason or another, some of the starting players might not have been around. For Gloucester, they're starting second baseman Jack Costanza was in California playing hockey on an invitation basis. You know, it gave, as I was talking to former coach Lisa Olsen, I said, you know, that just gives an underclassman or someone who's been sitting on the bench backing up a chance to get out there, show what they can do, score some points with the coach, make a contribution. And sometimes it works out, sometimes it does not, sometimes they struggle. So early in the season, you know, you're going to maybe take some surprise losses. Not a big deal. You know you're going to be there at the end. It's building up momentum and getting ready for later in the season. So, you know, as long as you don't come down with a lot of sore arms and injuries, then I think you're okay.
Okay, speaking of okay, we're going to check in with Gary Larrabee here in a second, so please stay with us. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night, and you can email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. All right, we are back now with Gary Larrabee, golf writer, sports historian, and all-around good guy, as we usually say. How you doing, Gary?
All-around good guy. I appreciate that, Rick. I get the big boost to my ego,
oh,
let me
okay.
tell you.
Okay, well, that's all I know from you is you're a good guy. Anyway, obviously this is, I don't know, is this kind of like the biggest week of the golf? I know all the majors are huge, but the Masters, is that like the granddaddy of them all?
I think the Masters has certainly taken over as the foremost major championship, at least in America. We have three of the four majors in the United States. The one that is not is the Open Championship. That's over in England or Scotland or Ireland in July. But yes, to answer your question, no question, the Masters is truly the granddaddy of them all for all the obvious reasons. It's April, we're getting on with a big, big part of the golf season for the PGA Tour, and this year, among all years, we're all waiting to see what Tiger will do.
Tim, are you there?
Yeah.
I'm just looking at Gary's agenda.
at Gary's description of Tiger,
yeah.
The agenda that's sent to us. Most complimentary, Gary, of you know, solidifying that truly good guy image of yours. yeah, it's interesting that he's continuing to play out the drama rather than simply, you know, making a pronouncement that, yep, yeah, I'm in. Well, I don't know, we're going to have to wait and see, sort of, you know, come on, just let me know if you're going to play it, you know, so I can put a dollar down on it. You know,
well, it's going to be there anyway. It's going to be there anyways for tomorrow night's Champions Dinner, which is hosted by the defending champion, which in this case is Japan's Hideki Matsuyama. So they're all expecting sushi and all kinds of exotic fish food, probably, from Japan.
Hey,
I think most of the guys... Sorry?
I would do the sushi dinner.
Well, I think most of the guys are hoping they can get a steak and a baked potato, but filet mignon, a baked potato, not steak. Filet mignon or a tenderloin, but so Tiger's going to be there for that anyways. The other big question is, will his legs hold up? I think he'll find that out from practice rounds today and tomorrow, and maybe Wednesday morning, and then he'll make his declaration. I know he's entered for the time being. He's in the entry list of roster of players. He obviously has to have a unique situation of whether he thinks he can go 72 holes starting Thursday night. And I just spoke to dear friends who live in Augusta. You guys may have been aware of, if you read my golf column, my first golf column of the year in the Salem News Today, the Loverings, Earl, who's a Salem-born product, and his gorgeous wife, Janet, they're expecting a very nasty storm tomorrow. High winds, heavy rain. So we're not sure how that might even affect the golf course come around to Thursday. So all kinds of big storylines out of Augusta National tonight and tomorrow, obviously. And whenever Tiger speaks his gospel-like words, we'll know how everything stands for the kickoff on Thursday morning with Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, and Tom Watson.
Well, it's going to be interesting with the old timers and the newbies on the tour who have made the tournament and see how this flesh is out, especially over the first couple of days.
So true, and we've got so many players who could be potential winners this week, whether it's their first time there or not. There's so much talent dripping from these players. Whether it's Patrick Cantlay, or Colin Morikawa, or you name them, there's a tremendous field of young players. We talked about it last week, under 30, who could be a big factor come Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It's a wide open tournament, I think, guys, whether Tiger plays or not.
Gary, who do you like? Before they even hit a tee shot, who are you liking to get the green jacket?
I am very big on Colin Morikawa. I picked him in previous majors, and of course he's won two already. I think he's the youngest player, guys, in the history of the game of the PGA Tour to win his first two majors, not his first major, but his first two before even Jack and before even, I believe, Tiger. So Colin's my pick for the week, and but there are so many players who could beat him. It should be another fantastic Masters, and it could just be another historic final nine on Sunday, like they say in the Kentucky Derby. Down the stretch they come.
Down the stretch.
Down the back nine, they'll come at Augusta National on Sunday afternoon. It could be another doozy.
Yeah, it could be another more of the most exciting 2 hours in racing.
I like that. It is the most exciting. That's a perfect description for what happens on the final night at Augusta on most Sundays in April when they wrap up their tournament. So looking forward to it, guys.
Yeah, definitely. It's the one that I think, even if you're a casual golf fan, Gary, it's the one that you know about, you pay some attention to, and then when it gets here, you keep sort of an eye about what's happening Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday. It's okay, let's get a beer and sit down and watch this thing play out.
Yeah, it should be fabulous. Moving right along, though, we're still talking about more PGA Tour stuff. It's kind of interesting who won yesterday at the Valero Texas Open. J.J. Spaun won his first PGA Tour event on his 147th attempt. Another example, Tim, as we've talked about in the past, Rick, too, that these guys are coming out of nowhere to win their first tournament this year in 2022. Not that I expect them to be in contention this week at Augusta, but there's just so much talent out there, and these names we don't even know who they are. It just continues week after week.
Yeah, I'm going through the board, and it's like, okay, how many names can I recognize? And Matt Kuchar, certainly, and then you get down to a tie before Charles Howell the third. You know, I keep thinking Gilligan's Island when I see his name. Every time I see his name, I'm going to the island. Tied for eighth, and then it's like, okay, who else is playing these things?
No, you're right. There were so many no names in that summary sheet from last night, and who played in that tournament. And of course, some of the bigger names who played as a tune-up. Didn't even make the cut. Rory McIlroy, I don't think even made the cut, Tim.
Yeah, you know, and again, the other thing that's amazing to me is how many non-American players are finishing in the top half of the board. You know, that have their skills from Europe and Asia and in South America, and showing up and grabbing a check.
Well, it's so true. It's really true. Moving right along, though, on the professional side, we should make note that Rob Oppenheim from Salem-born, Andover-bred, made the cut this past weekend at the Korn Ferry Tournament in Georgia, but didn't play well. He finished at minus 3, 14 shots off behind the winner, TJ Vogel. So it hasn't been a very good year for Rob Oppenheim on the Korn Ferry Tour. Evan Harmeling from Andover didn't even play that week, last week, this past weekend. And Stephen Delisio tried to qualify a couple weeks ago and shot 5 over par. It took 4 runners to make the playoff to qualify to get into the Korn Ferry event. So it's been rough times for both Stephen Delisio and Rob Oppenheim. Lastly, we should make note very briefly that Jennifer Kupcho, who won the LPGA tournament yesterday, the first major of the year, which used to be called the Dinosaur Nabisco, now it's called the Chevron Championship, and it's leaving Mission Hills in the California desert after God knows how many years, 40 years, I believe, to move to, I think it's moving to Texas, believe it or not. Anyway, she was the winner yesterday at the first major of the year on the LPGA tour, and she was the first American, guys, believe it or not, who's won The Dinosaur, I think, in 6 or 7 years, the Asians have taken over, of course, the LPGA Tour, and they're great players and great personalities. But it was nice to see an American win the Dinosaur. The last time, it's not even called the Dinosaur this year, it's the Chevron, but we'll always talk about it as the Dinosaur. Colgate, and now then it became the Nabisco, and now it's farewell completely on that side of things. Beyond that, guys, all the golf courses locally are open, public and private, which is Yahoo for all of us, and we're really into the golf season now, guys.
And then driving by a couple of them going up Route 1 over the weekend, Gary, they look in good shape. The fairways, even the greens, look in good shape.
Well, they all had a very good winter. There was no ice freeze on top of the turf. It's just a great thing to see, and we're rearing to go. We're all looking forward to making our triple bogeys and our quadruple bogeys and our six putts on different greens and just getting out there and, for most of us, making a fool of ourselves.
Spring hopes eternal, whichever. Gary, before we let you go, I've asked you this question before, but I got to ask you again. When you think Augusta, the first thing that comes to mind of your visit there, what's one of your favorite memories that just pops right into your head?
Well, there's nothing like the first time in everything, guys, whether it's, we know what we're talking about, but the first time seeing, just walking on the property and seeing what Augusta National really looks like up close and personal is an unforgettable experience. I'll never forget it. You've never seen so much green and so much beauty. Flowers, green, beautiful, tall, huge, tall pine trees. It's never mind the golf itself, guys, just to be on the property.
Yeah.
It's just remarkable what they've done with that property over the years. Make it more and more beautiful seemingly every year. But there is a concern this year that the scores may get very low because we're talking a lot of rain tomorrow, maybe some rain later in the week, so there could be some low scores this year. But of course, the great equalizer as Augusta National, guys, are the greens. And my friends, the Loverings, were out there watching the amateur tournament on Sunday, and they couldn't believe how fast the greens were, even for the women who were playing in the women's amateur. There was one, as you probably saw, by a 16-year-old American young lady named Amy Davis. Pretty exciting thing right there. She went over 54 holes. The last round is played at Augusta National. The first two rounds are played off-site, but it was quite a finish to them yesterday, and the greens seem to always be the determining factor in this tournament.
Okay, and what do you want to tease your column coming up this week?
Well, it's just what I mentioned, the memories from my six trips to
National.
It appeared in the paper appeared in the Salem News today.
Okay.
And I will tease next week's column if you'd like.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Rick, there's a wonderful memoir in novel form. It's almost like in Caddyshack form by a young fellow named Doug McGregor, who has written a wonderful book on his memories when he worked at Middleton Golf Club. Middleton Golf Course, that beautiful par 3 that's no longer with us up on Route 114 in Middleton. And it's like a Caddyshack, a low-key North Shore version of Caddyshack. Wonderfully written, wonderfully narrated, lots of laughs, a little bit of boy-girl stuff in there. And it's really, really a wonderful book. I'll be writing about that next week.
Okay, and he's got a great golf name, too, so that works.
You know it.
All right, Gary, we'll see you next week. Have fun this week.
Stay well, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Take care. Doug McGregor. Have you seen the Robin Williams skit on Who Invented Golf?
No.
Oh, Google it, man. YouTube. Robin Williams on golf. You got to check it out. All right. We'll take a break and we'll come back with Mike Grenier. You're listening to North Shore Sports Night on msonewsports.com. And again, our email, msonewsports@gmail.com. And don't forget, tomorrow, the Salem News Sports Writers Podcast, hosted by Bill Newell. That'll drop around 8 a.m. Be sure to check it out right here on MSO.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back now. Tim, are you serious? Your power went out?
Yeah, I'm sitting in the dock. I got to go.
Go take care of stuff. Call back if you can.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Tim, how are you? I feel bad that your Connecticut team lost UConn women.
Oh, God, that hurt so much. My brother and I, we couldn't even communicate with each other. We both felt so bad.
Yeah.
But
I think,
you know,
South Carolina was... Yeah.
South Carolina, they came out like mad women.
Yeah. And they were the legitimate number one overall seed, I thought. You know, it proved to be self-correct, you know?
Yeah.
All right, Mike, I was informed, Gary usually sends us an agenda about what he wants to talk about, you know.
Yes.
And on the email he said that you guys were getting together for lunch today. So what'd you have? Where'd you go?
Well, we went to Brothers Deli in downtown Danvers.
Perfect, yep.
Extensive menu where the owner welcomed us with open arms because he was a friend of the late Bill Kaporis, the longtime sports editor of the Salem News.
Mm-hmm.
But we just, Gary and I, he brought about six or seven basketball books that he wants me to peruse. And we talked Celtics from the 1970s and 80s and 90s and all that. And we just had a blast. And I guess we're old enough now where our pictures are actually appearing in Celtic books. In other words, like, you know, Dan Shaughnessy's book about the 80s Celtics and Gary's been in a couple pictures of other books and all that, and so have I. And so we're just kind of having fun with that, reminiscing about,
yeah.
Has it been that long? And all of a sudden now we're our pictures are in, you know, on press row at Celtic playoff games or games from the 1970s.
That's cool, yeah. All right, I want to ask you, and then it's Tim's turn. I watched the game yesterday, and the second quarter, both Scalabrine, I don't know about Gorman, but Scalabrine and then the host back at the studio were talking about how the Celtics have to tighten up on defense. Now, I don't know enough about basketball, but it seemed to me the defense was working okay, but Washington was absolutely on fire in that second quarter.
Right. And I agree. And then the same thing happened in the previous game when they gave up like 121 points or something like that. But I think the point is well taken because the Celtics were averaging giving up just like 102 points a game, and the last two or three games they've had some slippage on defense, but we can attribute a lot of that to the fact that Robert Williams is the pinnacle of defense back there, and he holds the fort down, and he, like we've said before, he alters shot, he actually changes, I think, offensive strategies that the opposing team takes because he's such a threat to a disruption on defense. And I think the Celtics are adjusting with Daniel Tice at the center position. He's not nearly as effective or as powerful or as athletic as Robert Williams. But the Celtics and their fans and the media are going to have to live with that in the playoffs because Robert Williams will not be around, at least through the first round. And if they make it through the first round, who knows, maybe the second round. But I think that's the real problem right now, Rick, is obviously that Daniel Tice is not quite the same guy, definitely not the same guy as Robert Williams back there as a defensive stalwart.
You know, I was listening to an interview with Al Horford yesterday, and boy, he is so well spoken. And he was talking about, you know, his increased role now that Williams is out and playing more minutes, playing more in the middle, having to get out and get more rebounds. And he was just so complimentary of Tice, but, you know, coming back. He knows the system. He was a plug-in and play player for them. and he's tough, and he's gritty, and he's not spectacular, but he's going to get you rebounds. He's going to get you garbage, not garbage time points, but he's going to get to the Phil Esposito goal, the rebound that you just tap back in or you lay back. That's what his job is to do. It isn't to go out there and throw up three-pointers or drive the lane. It's to patrol around the basket and scoop up and put back in stuff the other guys miss.
Right, and you know what? To extend that thought, if you look at Daniel Theis, he's actually, unlike Robert Williams, who hasn't developed like a mid-range offensive game yet, you know, he will not take foul line jumpers. Theis is more than willing to take that little foul line jumper. And not only that, they're not afraid to give him the ball on the three-point line, and as long as he doesn't take too many of them, he could be a pretty decent threat from the three-point line, and that's something obviously that Robert Williams doesn't offer. By the same token, Daniel Theis does not offer the Robert Williams type of defense. But guys, if you look at the Celtics this week, this is going to be a fun week if you follow that team, because the three remaining games are against three really, really strong teams, right? You got back-to-back games, Wednesday night against the Chicago Bulls, who are right now fifth in the Eastern Conference, but really just three games behind the Celtics. They have four games to go. The Celtics have three games to go. Then you have the very next night, the Milwaukee Bucks, who are still, you know, obviously thriving to finish first. They're only a half game behind the Celtics. And then you have the Memphis Grizzlies sitting there for the final game of the season in Memphis on Saturday night at 7 p.m., and that game could actually determine where the Celtics will finish in the top four spots. They could finish anywhere from first through four, most likely. If they have a complete collapse, the Chicago Bulls could overtake them, and the Celtics would finish fifth. But these next three games are going to determine where the Celtics will be in that Eastern Conference, whether it be one, two, three, or four. And I'd love to hear what you guys think about the elephant in the room for the Boston Celtics is their vaccination status.
They
end up playing Toronto, which is possible. If they finish third and Toronto sixth, they would be playing Toronto, which means three potential games in Toronto, where the Canadian mandate is very clear. As of January 15th, players cannot even enter the country if they have not been vaccinated. So, and last week we saw that when the Celtics did go to Toronto, they went with basically their second unit and their bench players. They made the trip, and the big, you know, Horford didn't make the trip for personal reasons, and they kept Jaylen Brown and Tatum out for so-called minor knee problems. However, it really makes you wonder what the vaccination status is of the key players on that team.
You know, the commitment to the team is something that, you know, only each player knows individually and what that means to him. I was talking to a relative of my wife's recently, and she and her husband were in Ireland during the height of the pandemic. And the restrictions that they had over there were unbelievable. Americans complain in this country about rights. Well, in Ireland, which is a free democratic society, you couldn't even step outside of your house if you weren't vaccinated, pretty much. I mean, it was incredible. She said it was so amazing, the lockdown over there for so long, and people adhered to it. So I don't quite get why someone, if you got a legitimate reason, okay. But if it's something that's to me about personal rights, I just say, you know, gosh, you know, what do you live in America, you have this right, but for goodness gracious sake, get vaccinated.
Well, yeah, because Rick, part of that, you don't have, if you have the right to control your own body, but you don't have the right to not tell anybody about it and infect.
Mm-hmm.
Family members, your teammates, people in the general public, people at airports and hotels, you don't have that right to not disclose that. And it's a horrendous situation. Kyrie Irving, not that he deserves credit for anything, but at least he came out and said that he didn't get vaccinated. Whereas Brad Stevens, in an interview just a few days ago, wouldn't reveal the status of the Boston Celtics. He said it's their own individual decision. It is. But to me, if you're paying, as a Celtics season ticket holder, $200, $300, $600 per game to see them in the playoffs, and you go up to Toronto and those players aren't eligible to play, what's the point of spending all that money for tickets if, you know, if it looks like they're going to lose two or three games in Toronto?
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is a huge elephant in the room for the Celtics, and it'll be really intriguing what happens if they have to fly to Toronto and all of a sudden two or three guys are out.
Well, you know, it's funny, they were talking to Brown end of the week. Yeah, well, I'm going to be all set to play in all the games. But he wouldn't say if he was vaccinated or not.
Correct. Well, you know, Tim and Rick, you'll chuckle at this one. I saw a comment, or someone asked, made a great comment and said, if you ask an athlete if they've been vaccinated, if the answer is longer than one word, they haven't been vaccinated.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
In other words, if that answer is not no or yes, then you could probably assume they haven't been vaccinated. It's like the Aaron Rodgers syndrome. I've been immunized, right? And certainly then it came out that he hadn't been vaccinated. So I love the Celtics' chances if they have a healthy team and if they have even a remote possibility of getting Robert Williams back if they make it through the first round. I like their chances against anybody in the Eastern Conference, but if they're unvaccinated and go to Toronto, they're going to be in deep trouble.
I want to ask you a strategic point. Wes Unseld Jr., whom I didn't know about, I made the comment after the game yesterday, something about 1 through 5 can switch on the Celtics defense. And I'm assuming that means that whoever moves out of position, there's going to be another defensive player coming into position. Is that what he means?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think he means they're a versatile defensive team. And, you know, we've seen Marcus Smart. He won't take anybody on, whether it's a 6'3" guard or a 6'9" power forward or center. And I think, you know, you're talking guys like Horford, excellent defensive player, even though he's older now, his reactions aren't as great as they were 10 years ago. You know, you talk at Robert Williams, obviously when he's healthy, he's a tremendous defensive player. Tice can hold his own on defense. Certainly Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have worked much harder at the defensive end in the second half of the season than they did in the first half of the season. And so that's why I think they have a fighting chance in any playoff series they have, because they do make commitment to defense. And I think somehow they bought into, we got to give the coach credit here, because early on we were criticizing, or I was criticizing him as much as anybody, but he's the message that he's been delivering, which is all-out commitment to defense and all-out commitment to sharing the ball. They have somehow gotten much better at that since, I don't know, since January, because their record reflects that, too.
Yeah, you know, I caught a part of that game yesterday, and they've become much more enjoyable to watch. You see them coming down the court, and, you know, they're starting to drive down the side of the lane, and it's a quick pass out to the three-point area, but then it's a rotation through, come back looking for the ball across the top of the key, and that ball moves back around, just the way the old Celts used to do. I think he just broke out a lot of old film from the 60s, Mike, and said,
yes,
sit down and watch this, and watch how easy it is to score a basket when you do this.
Oh, yeah. Because when you make a lot of passes, the defense is automatically going to be off balance. So, you know, if you're making a lot of passes within, let's say, a 15-second framework, the defense is going to be out of kilter, out of balance, and you're going to wind up with an easier shot than, you know, dribbling the ball for 10 or 12 or 14 seconds, which is what both Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum were guilty of early in the year. Maybe not trusting their teammates and wanting to take on more of their offensive responsibility. They were doing too much of that isolation early in the season. And so it's a much easier way to score baskets. And as a fan, aesthetically speaking, it's a much prettier team to watch, if we can use the word pretty from an aesthetic. Because it can look like a ballet, as you know, if they play the game correctly and they pass the ball like Larry Bird used to. You know, and we're seeing some of that with the Celtics, the ball. Marcus Smart takes all kinds of chances. Sometimes he makes great passes. And obviously, you know, it's so funny, when Brown and Tatum were missing a couple of games, Marcus Smart tried to do too much, and he ended up having 13 turnovers in a two-game span. And it was because he was trying to make the fancy pass, but Tatum and Brown weren't around to accept those passes. And, they ended up being turnovers for him. So, you know, fortunately, those guys are back, and these next three games, you're talking three strong teams, the Chicago Bulls and the Milwaukee Bucks, on a Wednesday and Thursday, the back-to-back situation, and then a couple of nights later, having to go to Memphis, which only has the second-best record in the NBA at 55-23. So they're a great team to watch, by the way. To me, they're the most fun team to watch in the NBA. And I'll tell you what, you know, as Celtics fans, sometimes we complain about what they've done this season when there were a couple of games under 500. But I watched the Lakers last night, and you want to talk about a team that's a mess. They lost six straight. They have 16 games under 500. You can never picture a team with LeBron James being 16 games under 500 and 11th place in the Western Conference. At this point, they won't even make the play-in because 11th place means you're done for the summer.
You know, I wonder if things are changing in the NBA because the free fall of the Lakers with all their superstars,
right.
Brooklyn in trouble, a couple of other teams as well with all these superstars. And then you're seeing these other teams who, well, of course you got Giannis at Milwaukee, but you don't have the great three, four superstars that have gotten together to play. You've got team play. And,
right.
I, as Tim said, I'm having a blast watching these Celtics. And one quick observation from yesterday, this will be my final comment, but you can't blink when Derek White is on the court, number one. I love the physical aspect of yesterday's game. They let him play. And the way Jason Tatum can accelerate with the ball, and he's gotten so much stronger. I mean, those things are just really cool heading into the stretch run.
I agree. And I think there was a comment made yesterday about how he has bulked up, Tatum, his upper body. Because now, you know, when he was young, of course, you know, he came into the league at age 19. Bailey just almost like he was a young 19 when he came into the league.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a skinny kid, sort of like Giannis was in his early years. And he could score a lot, but he did a lot of it from the outside. He wasn't strong enough to finish through contact, which is like what he does now. He can get smacked on the way to the basket and still finish the layup and then get to the foul line for that third point, the conventional old-fashioned three-point play. So, yeah, and I think Jaylen Brown, Rick, I know you love this. When he takes it into the paint, he's so quick. He makes these really acrobatic moves
yeah.
to get to the basket and make layups, and he also oftentimes gets fouled. So that's the stuff I want to see in the playoffs and see how good they can be against the good teams. But to me, there's that drawback of if they play Toronto, who is really vaccinated? And, you know, Tatum flat out said he's been vaccinated, and Horford was very ambiguous, and Jaylen Brown has refused to answer the question altogether.
Right. Well, I think, you know, teams turn it up a notch, Mike. We've all seen that in the past. They're a totally different animal. Sometimes they come out and they'll have an entirely different playbook or even starting five to throw at you. And the Celtics could, again, go to Toronto and have a very, very difficult time, you know, trying to determine matchups and do it quick enough that they don't fall far behind in any game that they got they're gonna have to play
right.
at least two up there.
That's
so
right.
That they could take a momentum northbound and come back with their heads in their hands.
Yep. And you know what? It's funny. People, I've seen so many comments even nationally. Nobody wants to play the Brooklyn Nets in the playoffs. Well, I mean, they're barely going to make the playoffs, and they're a couple of games over 500. And with Kyrie in the starting lineup, they're 10-15.
Okay.
So in other words, with Durant and Kyrie in there, they're actually not as effective as when just Durant plays with his cast of complementary players. They have a 7 or 8 games over 500 with just Durant playing, but they're 10-15 with Kyrie in the lineup. So I don't know why anybody would be petrified of the Brooklyn Nets. I just don't see it.
Well, that was true in Boston, too. I remember you're going over the stats one time when he was in Boston, and the same thing.
Sure.
When he was in the lineup, they had a worse record than when he was not in the lineup.
Yeah, it is strange, but true. And but right now, we don't know where the dominoes will fall. That's the fun of this next few days. We don't know where the dominoes are going to fall because, like I said, the Celtics could finish. I think Miami Heat will finish first, but the Celtics could easily finish second or third or fourth. It's like what happens in these next three games.
All right, Tim, we got to wrap it up here.
All right. What do you like tonight, Mike?
I tell you what, I think I like Carolina because carrying the momentum over from the Duke game. I just think as a number 8 seed, that's quite a thing because they didn't have a great regular season. So I kind of like, I think they're going to win this game.
What do they call that, playing with house money?
Tim, what do you think?
I'm, you know, I, frankly, after Connecticut lost, I really can't. I haven't fought them all year long.
Okay.
I've liked North Carolina historically. I've never been a big fan of Kansas historically.
Right.
I think Kansas just might have a bit more. Plus, the Carolina center turned his ankle, and how effective is he going to be able to be for the entirety of the game?
Right, right. You still want St. Peter's to be in it.
I do.
I want a Duke to still be in it.
Exactly.
I wanted a Gonzaga St. Peter's.
Well, I guess we'll have to wait till next year.
All right, so the final season ends on Sunday, is that right?
I believe so, yeah.
I mean, the regular season.
It's funny, NBC made the decision today, just a couple of hours ago, to move the Celtics game versus Memphis on Saturday night to 7 p.m. Because there's some 3:30 games that will affect how the Celtics might approach that final game.
Wow.
Because they could be playing for second place, third place, or fourth place. So it's funny, they fooled around with the starting time, flexed it, and made it a 7 p.m. start.
Okay. Well, we're looking forward to your analysis next week.
That'll be fun, Rick.
You bet. Thanks, Mike. It's always fun.
Thank you, too.
All righty, Michael. Thank you, buddy, as always.
Take care.
All right. Talk to you later, Mike. Good night.
Bye-bye now. Yep.
All right. That is Mike Grenier, sports writer and really Celtics expert, basketball expert overall. Tim, any final thoughts you want to mention here?
No, I'm just hoping for a really good competitive game. I think, you know, what we've seen through most of the tournament for both men and women have been good competitive games, especially as they've gotten down to the 16-8, the Final Four, and now tonight. I got to go horrible that Connecticut didn't equip themselves better, but they had, you know, they had over 15, at least 15 turnovers yesterday. They got out-rebounded by an embarrassing amount, something, again, you never see. But, again, kudos to South Carolina. They played like champions, and they richly deserve to have the national title. It's interesting, on the same weekend, you know, Mike Krzyzewski lost his first game to North Carolina when he started.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, yeah. Well, I know he lost to them in the regular season, too.
Yeah, but I mean, his very first game that he lost as a head coach,
yep.
He lost to North Carolina, and then he loses again to end his career against North Carolina.
Yeah, must be in the script. Must have been in the script.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. All right, Coach, it's been fun. It's a little late.
Yeah, I'm waiting for power to come back.
Okay, good luck.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, Tim, talk to you later. Thanks so much.
All right, buddy.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Tim Kearns, our MSO analyst and ambassador of goodwill. I'm Rick Moore. Bill Poposky is our producer and engineer. Bill Newell will be hosting the Sports Writers podcast tomorrow, Tuesday, it drops around 8 a.m., and he'll have the usual guys on board from the Salem News. I'm just trying to see if he's got a teaser up here. According to Bill, the Sports Writers will be sharing the latest news on the North Shore High School spring sports. You'll be hearing updates on a few of the early games and previews in lacrosse, baseball, and softball. And check out some of the area's unsung athletes and their key winter contributions. And, of course, the All-Stars have been up in the paper, the Gloucester Times, Salem News, for the last several days as well. You'll be listening to Phil Stacey, the executive sports editor of the Salem News, Nick Giannano, sports writer at the Salem News, and Nick Kukru, the Gloucester Times sports editor, along with MSO News Sports' Bill Newell. That's tomorrow, dropping probably around 8 a.m. It's the Salem News Sports Writers Weekly Podcast. All right, that's it for me. Thank you so much. If you want to email us, msonewsports@gmail.com. This is msonewsports.com.